Welcome to season two of the Santam Ensure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And me, Mapalo Maku. We invite you to join in on these discussions about personal finance and money. We hope that through these conversations, you'll be motivated and you will take action to make sure that you get your finances together.
So as we are in July, and July every year means tax season. So we thought, Mapalo, that today we're going to chat about tax. When do you pay it? Is there any way to pay less tax?
Yeah.
Not so altogether sure about that, but we've brought in our expert, Andre Botma. Andre, welcome. And I have to just note that you have updated your X profile to call yourself a tax therapist. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably an accurate reflection. Why do we need therapy when it comes to tax?
I think SARS have over the years improved their communication, and everybody is hyper aware that once a year you have to submit your return. But often people feel helpless or they don't know who to turn to because they don't want to go direct to the source. They don't want to go direct to SARS. So when people come to me, their stress levels are already high because they feel helpless and they don't know what to do. And then my job, most often than not, is to lower the stress levels from a 10 to a 3, because we have this idea about SARS that it's this big, nefarious organization that's difficult to deal with. But in truth of the matter is, if you're comfortable with SARS, it's not that bad. But still, everybody is, their opinion or their feelings are valid. So I have to take them from that stress level and bring it down a bit. That's
yeah.
But so how do you feel?
No, Maya. I feel exactly the same way as you expressed about SARS. I have accountants still, but every time I get an email from SARS, any type of communication, I clench and I get so incredibly anxious. So for me, Andre, it leads me to say, let's start with who needs to file their taxes and how accurate should they have? What kind of information should they have when they're filing for their taxes?
For individuals, so let's, you know, companies and trusts have to file. If they're registered, they have to file. But when it comes to individuals, SARS have obviously implemented the auto-assessment. So if you work full-time, you're going to get auto-assessed. And if you earn an income, there are certain levels under which you don't have to submit. But my recommendation is if you're earning an income, submit your return. There is the argument for students who earn a small income, or maybe if you're retired and you're still earning a small bit of income, that you don't have to submit. But for most individuals who are earning an income, you do want to submit your return and make sure that you're compliant.
I'm going to pick up on that. So my son is a student.
Yeah.
But he does extra work for film shoots and things like that. So he actually gets taxed. Mm. So if you do any freelance work or anything like that as a student, they usually deduct 25% tax, right?
Correct.
So he has to do a tax return in order to get back his money. So actually, probably most people, even if they're a student.
There are certain student work that, like working weekends at a restaurant where you don't get an RP5, they don't deduct tax. And usually it's less than 100,000 for the year. At the moment it goes over 100,000, or you're working for a corporate where they are going to deduct the freelancer tax, then it is a good idea to submit your return, because often the amount of work that you've done versus the tax that you've paid doesn't coincide, and then you could get a refund. So obviously the benefit of filing your return is that if you don't, you aren't going to get your refund. But if you do file your return, there is a chance that you would get your refund.
And for me, it kind of brings me to the idea of people who are on social media. I mean, they have the students who are earning over 200,000 sometimes. Should they be worried about the tax man? Should they be filing at all? If they say, you know, this is just a little side hustle, I'm on Instagram posting for a company, getting an income, what is best practice there?
Best practice is obviously to file, but the point is, like, that type of income where the income doesn't go through a traditional employer and no pay-as-you-earn is deducted, it goes straight to your bank account. Or in the case of foreign companies, it could go to like a Wise account, or it could go to a PayPal. People think that SARS don't know about it.
Yes.
But it is kind of a good idea to say, okay, listen, I have, like, as an honest citizen, I have earned 200,000. Should I declare? And the answer is yes. And then to find out what's the best way to go about that. In terms of the information sharing, I'm not 100% sure whether the banks are actually providing SARS with the direct info that you have passed $300,000 through your bank account. But the point is, if that happened and you're not telling SARS anything, why? It's better to be upfront with them, and then like you can get some additional help to pay less. But I wouldn't risk it, so to speak, because SARS is getting better at that information gathering.
And let me tell you, you know, you what they do, right? Say, for example, for 5 years, you've not declared your income. They go back and they add penalties and they add interest and they add all of these things. And when they do find you, because they probably will eventually find you, right? The technology is getting better. You go and you buy a car, for example. You've got to go and show your income to the bank. Somewhere along the line, they'll find you. And they love it. That's when it gets juicy for them, because they have mounted up years and years of penalties and interest. So I agree, Andre. I don't even think you should risk it. I really don't.
And I mean, I know a couple of people who've been in that position. And trust me, when they get you, they are like a dog with a bone and they will not let go.
Have they just been given 7 billion rand to find people, just by the way? So they're coming out after us. I wouldn't. That's why we get so anxious.
Why I get so nervous when it comes. Comes to SARS.
No, but this is exactly that specific wording, and this is actually what triggered the change. The wording "SARS is coming after me" is something that financial media says, but it's not actually true. SARS do not do door knocking. They're a technological firm. They don't have enough staff to send people after people. You might get a letter. Or a notification on e-filing to say that you haven't, or your tax profile shows that you haven't filed for 3 years. That is what happens. They don't, on the odd chance you've had crypto that you haven't declared for 4 years, there's a crypto audit, and SARS have been doing that. But there's no such thing as SARS is coming after you, almost like a ghost going to people's houses. It's not the 1980s anymore, you know. So, and it's also the IRS goes to people. South Africa, SARS doesn't go to people.
Yeah. So what are some of the deadlines we should be aware of as individuals and perhaps people who are running small businesses as well?
So the tax season is starting the 7th of July for all the auto assessments. And then for everybody else, individuals, companies and trusts, that's starting the 20th. And then the deadline for individuals to file their 2025 tax return is the 20th of October. So basically, you've got 3 months to submit your return. That's if you're standard employed. And if you're a provisional taxpayer, which means that you earn from other sources, etc., that is on the 19th of January. And then for trusts, it's the same date. And for companies, it is according to the year end. So that's probably at the end of Feb for most companies.
I want to take a step back here and actually unpack some of that in terms of the various dates. Because the auto assessments, so let's explain to you what auto assessments are, because I think that's still a little bit confusing. So on the 7th of July, tax filing season starts. So would people start getting this SMS saying you've been auto-assessed?
Like, correct.
And what does that actually mean?
So the auto-assessment, if you tick the following boxes, now there are third-party data that's being shared by SARS every year. It is your RB5, your medical aid, your RA. Those are the three things. And then maybe some interest earnings that you've got with the bank. That creates an estimated filing that SARS can say, okay, we know what you earn. Here's your auto assessment. Anything that doesn't fall into those four categories, anything out of the ordinary, a break of employment, rental income, you've sold a property, etc., will not get auto assessed. Or if it does, you need to file a manual return. So the auto assessment is if those third-party data is automatically there for SARS and they can base that assessment on that third-party data submitted to them.
Important. What I get worried about is that people say, oh, well, I don't need to look at it. I've been auto-assessed. So I think the question is, A, should you go in and check anyway? And B, should you ever click on a link that comes in an SMS?
Yes, we spoke about this last year. No, please don't click links through SMSs. Tax season is the season where phishing and scams happen. So that's SARS related. But when it comes to actually checking whether your auto assessment is correct, one of the things that you can do is get the RP5 from your employer and just verify that the auto assessment has the right codes and the data on it. I know that SARS brags about the accuracy of the auto assessments, and let's say there was an 85% accuracy across the board, it still means that 15% of everyone who got auto assessed were incorrect, or they had to file something extra, or there was an incorrect code used. So it doesn't mean it's perfect. I mean, it did take away the potential for a lot of practitioners who used to file those returns themselves. But still, check your own auto assessment. And there's no such thing as accepting or rejecting it. It just happens. And then sometimes you even get the refund, even though it might be incorrect. But then you still have until the end of, until the 20th of October to file a correct return.
So what if you get a refund that's not correct? Like, what if you
The money is in your account.
Yeah, and you just don't go and check. You just say, well, that's nice.
Yeah, This is where I say, because people say SARS coming after you. If you got a refund that is incorrect and you just accept it.
But how would I know that it is incorrect? Because in the first place, I don't really engage with SARS in a very open way. And I just trust that they know what they're doing. They are this big institution. So if they say I deserve a refund, clearly I do. And
I'm going to go spend it.
Yes.
Before anybody questions it.
Exactly.
and I think that is a... I think that is a perfect fair stance to take. I'm not going to argue against that because that's the system that they've built. They've built a system that allows people to just say, okay, cool, I got a refund, fine. It is then somehow, somewhere, your own responsibility. Well, hold a minute. I actually had a rental property that I rented out for 6 months, which is not in this auto assessment. Now you have to go back and fix it later on. The nice thing about the tax system is you can still fix it in the past, although it takes a bit more effort to fix. If you got auto assessed, there's usually a window in which you can fix something that was wrong. But the auto refund situation is something that I've fought with SARS before, and they're not going to change it because they like, I don't know why. I don't know. I disagree against the idea to refund people even before they get the chance to file the corrected return because there's an entire 2 week window, and SARS pays out those refunds within 3 to 5 days, 3 to 5 business days. So you don't have your window to correct doesn't open within the time that you get your refund.
So what if they do come back and they say, you know what, we actually refunded you. This was not supposed to happen. Do they want their money back?
That is a unique scenario. So for so what happens when you submit your return is it creates a line on your statement of account to say that you've been assessed, and then there's a refund that pays out. SARS have to issue an additional assessment to say that, well, hold on, we've actually issued the incorrect assessment, and then you will owe SARS. But I have seen rare cases where SARS actually issues an additional assessment without any additional sort of prodding from the taxpayer or from a practitioner for SARS to make such a change. So that doesn't happen quite often.
All right.
So Andre, you were talking about the dates. We've discussed the dates when everybody has to submit. But of course, there's the provisional taxpayer,
correct,
which has different dates. And I think what's very important is for people to realize when they become provisional taxpayers. Because if you're earning a rental income, for example, or like my poor mother who earned a whole lot of interest last year because money that she's using to buy a house was sitting in an interest-bearing account, suddenly we get an instruction from SARS that she's now a provisional taxpayer. So really important to understand when that happens.
Yeah, the trigger point for that, and the legislation is unnecessarily complicated in my opinion. It is the moment you start earning income where there's no pay as you earn being deducted, I would say prepare yourself for provisional tax. It's not something that you register yourself. You file for provisional tax, or SARS will notice on the assessment they consider you provisional tax because of what you've submitted on your return. But it is earning an income where no pay as you earn is being deducted. That is what makes you a provisional taxpayer.
very important to note, because, and also that you do have to do top-up payments. So you have to file, not only have to file, but you have to do your top-up payments. You've got to make a payment at the end of February, you make a payment again at the end of August, and then you make your final payment at the end of September. So three very important dates if you're a provisional taxpayer.
Yeah, I remember the first time I got, now you're a provisional taxpayer. I said, what is a provisional taxpayer to begin with? So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, and legislation makes it very complicated. But just to also wrap up, that 30th of September, if you didn't pay your provisional tax throughout the 2025 tax year, so that was last year, March till Feb this year, you have until the 30th of September this year to pay the provisional tax and then avoid any interest. If you miss the 30th September deadline, then there will be interest on the taxes that you didn't pay.
So what kind of interest and penalties we're looking at? Because we keep on mentioning interest, we keep on mentioning penalties. Are they in line with your normal interest that a bank would charge? What is the type of range we're looking at for SARS here?
It's linked to the repo rate. And so obviously it changes every frequently. I think it's still around 11%.
Sure. So it's pretty 11%. High.
Yeah, but it's simple interest. It's not compounded like the bank. So and it's on the tax owed. So that is how the interest is calculated on outstanding tax payments.
And penalties?
Penalties, there are different ones. There's obviously admin penalties for not filing on time. And so it ranges between 250 to 2,000 Rand per month for not filing a return. And then there are understatement penalties where you have either underdeclared your provisional tax, that comes up again. And that's the difference between the actual tax that you should have calculated versus the actual tax that you've paid. And then there's a penalty, a 20% penalty. So getting your estimates correct for provisional tax is important to avoid penalties. And then obviously filing on time will avoid the admin penalties.
And now, Maya, you know, we're talking about, you know, being auto-assessed and really going forward to the tax man and saying, hey, this is what I earn. What are some of the deductions that individuals...
Yes, this is what... So I think I want to break this down into two.
Yeah.
Because one is we've got people listening who are just employees, right? They get a pay slip. They probably get a bonus, you know, maybe if they're lucky. But that's pretty much it. So I want to kind of say, what are their opportunities for tax deductions? Mm. Then you've got somebody who maybe is employed, but they have a rental income from a property. So what are their deductions? And then you've got Maplo and I, who have our own businesses. And what are our opportunities for deductions? So give us three scenarios.
Yeah.
Sandabas, is this idea where individuals contribute the most, the biggest percentage towards tax collected, but we get the least incentives. So people who are full-time employed have only one real option, which is the retirement annuity. The pension is done through your employer. So it is a deduction, but it's through your employer. Medical aid is a credit. It's no longer a deduction. And so the one that's left behind is RA and donations. But donations is something that you do out of your own volition. It's not really it is a tax deduction, but I can't go to a client and say, hey, I think you should donate money because you're going to get a tax deduction. I can tell them that, but that's not, quote unquote, tax advice. Get an RA, yes. So that's the main additional deduction for individuals that's full-time employed. Then when it comes to people earning, whatever income source you earn additionally will tell you what type of deductions you can apply to it. So if you get a travel allowance, you could claim with a logbook. If you earn rental income, you will have rental related expenses. So you will have a bond interest, you will have the levies, there will be water and electricity that you pay for, and you can deduct that against the rental income. And then if you have your own small business, whether it's through a PTY or as a sole proprietor, any business related expenses that's related to the income that you're earning, those expenses can also be deducted. But I would recommend to get a bookkeeper or an accountant to assist you in, you know, identifying what those expenses are that you can claim.
And as a business owner, what I know you said we should get an accountant, but for someone who is deciding, should I go through the PTY route, or should I do? Should I continue as a sole proprietor? What are the benefits of either one, and which one should one choose?
That's actually an entire podcast episode by itself.
Okay, so we're going to revisit this as a podcast, but maybe we can give a high level response there.
High level is the two things I check for is traction and volume. If you have traction, meaning you've been doing this business for a while, it's making decent income, it's probably a good idea to incorporate that, because it shows that you've proven that this business works and it's something that you want to carry on full time, or you're thinking about hiring people. So the more you're treating it as a business, that might be a good idea to incorporate. Then there's obviously, you know, SPC versus PTY, and there's some tax differences between those two. But if you want to stay a sole proprietor, usually if it's no traction or it's drips and drabs, the income comes in every now and then, it doesn't make a significant impact. It does make an impact. But usually it's about how much income it is and how are you treating it as a business. If you're treating it as a business, it's likely that it's better to incorporate it, because it could become something that's big. But if there's no traction, or if an amount isn't big, or you're going to stop after 6 months, you can keep it in your own name.
And I want to come, I think that is a podcast in itself, because certainly I had a lot of benefit going into PTY Limited. The negative was bank fees go up a lot. One of the big things also with tax, and this is something that, funny enough, I picked up last year with one of our Suntum mentees, was the implication with your marriage contract and tax. Because she's married in community of property and she earns quite a large amount of interest income.
Yeah.
And suddenly her husband got a bill, a tax bill, for half of that interest income. And she contacted me and said, what on earth is going on here? So just explain that.
Yeah, so how you are married will also have an impact of how you are taxed. If you're married in community of property, any interest or any investment income is split 50-50 between the two spouses. But it also means that the interest exemption would apply to both. So that's the benefit. It gets split 50-50. Rental income as well, it also gets split 50-50. So sometimes it might be better if one person is in a high tax bracket and another person lower bracket, you can mitigate taxes if you're married in community of property. But on the other hand, if you're married out of community of property, it depends on who owns the property, who are the owners of the investment account. And so then you effectively split the each person is then responsible for their own investment income or rental income. And so it does have a significant or fairly significant impact on tax. But I always say, you know, you want to get marital advice on how you get married according to what you decide is best with your lawyer or with your marriage counselor, etc., and then find out or then discuss the tax consequences as a result of making that choice. So don't make tax choices because it's more beneficial, but then it's not the right choice for the actual marriage that you want. So,
although I just want to bring in there, one of the big benefits, of course, of getting married or having a recognized marriage, even if it's a traditional marriage, is that you are considered a spouse. And once you're considered a spouse, there is a lot of tax exemptions. So you can donate, you can transfer money between each other without donations tax. On death, you can inherit your spouse's estate without tax.
Correct.
So there's a lot of benefits, tax benefits, actually, to being formally married. And yeah. I think that is something that, yes, you don't want to go and get married for the sake of tax, but it is worth understanding the tax regime.
Yeah, one of the things that I made a joke about was this whole idea of girlfriend allowance, and how that is, if SARS, you know, there's certain things that SARS, they got paid $7 billion to chase after. You know what, you're not chasing after girlfriend allowance. That's a good example, because donations tax is one of the taxes that's avoided. And so girlfriend allowance is taxable, but donating to your spouse is not. You know?
So, I have some sensitivity about girlfriend allowances as a term, but I do get what you're saying. So if you're giving your partner, male or female, money, it could be seen as a donation if it's above $100,000. You
Correct.
Could attract donations tax. But if you happen to have a legal contract that says you're married, you don't have to pay donations tax.
Correct. Yeah.
So, Andre, is it worth it to go get a tax practitioner? Or can some people just do it on e-filing? When should you
There's
get
also
a tax practitioner?
As well.
Yes.
Tax TIM I find quite useful. What are your views on that?
So I think people should be equipped on being able to do their own return. But I think SARS have taken away that power slightly because of the auto assessment system. So what's left behind is only the complex tax returns for individuals. Now those individuals have to go to practitioners. It's you aren't going to do your own. If you drive a Volvo or a BMW X3, you aren't going to change your own oil, right? You can change your Nissan 1400's oil because that's simple enough. But the simple tax returns have been taken away. So now you have to go to a practitioner if you have done things that are out of the ordinary. You've changed jobs twice. You've had a rental income. You've sold a property. You've sold shares. You've been involved with crypto. You've earned foreign income. You know, and these things are actually increasing. People are no longer just having one source of income. People are having multiple sources, and that creates complexity. You know, and then don't submit your own return. But definitely people should be equipped, one, about how to file their own, do their own returns and how it works. And that's why I exist. But two, get help when things become complex and you can't do it yourself.
And how do tax practitioners earn? Because I remember while I was still in corporate, you'd have tax practitioners who say, well, I'll do it for free. Then when you do get your tax return, I'll take a percentage of that. Is that still prevalent?
Mapala, that is such a brilliant question because I don't think it's legal. I mean, it's not good practice to say I'll get a percentage of what I get back from you.
Yeah, so that practice is frowned upon. I've seen in code of conduct between in discussions between SAIT and SARS to say that that's frowned upon. It's a contingency fee. Contingency fees are quite normal when it comes to objections. You know, you owe SARS 300,000, you get a tax person to fix it for you, they get the entire 300,000 written off, you get a percentage of the tax that they've won for you. But in terms of refunds, that is an incentive, that's incentivizing the wrong thing. And so the way tax practitioners should be paid is for, one, advice. Listen, it takes a good tax practitioner 5 minutes to do somebody's tax return, even if it's complex. But you are paying them for the years that they've been trained on doing it in 5 minutes. So you pay for the advice and for the actual work that was done, not for the time that it took. But the whole percentage around refunds, it's frowned upon, but you won't find legislation that says it's illegal. There is an act that governs contingency fees, but contingency fees is more a legal thing where there's a legal battle and the potential fees towards SARS is a million, and then surely the lawyer must be awarded for winning such a case. But that is where I would say a contingency fee is more fair, but not for refunds. That is,
and I think it does start to create that. And I think it used to be like that in the past. It used to create this thing where they would skate very thin on very thin ice, the practitioners, because they would perhaps try and put things through that maybe shouldn't have gone through because they're trying to get a contingency. So I don't think you should link your refund with. I just don't think that's. That's a healthy practice, person.
Got it.
But I think that I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I do feel, Mapla, that you and I need to revisit the whole sole proprietor PTY, because I think we suffer these things ourselves. Yeah. So definitely it's something I'd like to pick up. But I think for the listener today, we've had auto assessments are coming. Please, you will get an SMS to say you're auto-assessed. Don't click on any links ever because there is so many scams going on.
And what if, just the last question on that, Maya, what if you do get an email saying, oh no, you need to change your banking details on here. Here's a link for you to change your banking details. Also ignore that as well. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And for you, Andre, what are some of the things that people should be avoiding now during the tech season? And just your last words for people going into the tech season.
Go to the website, go check it out, click a few buttons, see what's going on there, you know, and then discover, okay, this is where I get my statement of accounts. So familiarize yourself with e-filing and you'll feel a little bit better. But again, you're going to do it once a year. And so so reach out to a practitioner, ask them to do it with you for the first year. And then next year you can do it by yourself with their help. So, but again, it's once a year. You think about food and what you want to cook every day, but SARS is a thought as an individual that happens once a year. And that shouldn't be something, although it is a thing in the back of your brain that's like, rrr, but just engage with the app, engage with their actual website. And it's not that bad.
Well, thank you so much, Andre, for your inputs. And to those of you listening to our Money Bootcamp, please tune in for our next episode. And as we said at the beginning, this is a way and a journey, a way for you to travel with us in your own personal financial journey.
100%. Thank you so much, Andre. It's been quite informative. And I hope through listening to this, your fears get a little bit less and less about SARS.
Thank you.